Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The Athletic.
MotoGP is on a brief pause with the Argentinian Grand Prix not happening this year. They won't be racing again until Austin in the middle of April. But the Race MotoGP podcast is not pausing because we've got a couple of weeks of excellent exclusive interviews to bring to you. And the first of them is with the man who's now Trackhouse team principal, Davide Brivio. But this is a man who has been a lot of things with a lot of success in MotoGP. So Simon Patterson is here with me, Matt Beer, Val Hurinci will be joining us a bit later to talk about everything that came out in the Brivio interview. But Simon, to start off, tell us about the circumstances of this interview cropping up, because this was quite a nice one, wasn't it?
It was, actually. So obviously, since the since we essentially broke the news that Trackhouse were coming into MotoGP before anyone else got the details of that, we've built up a really good relationship with the team. They've got some like really excellent PR staff who I've worked with for a long, long time. And quite nicely for a long form interview like this, they actually reached out to me and said, hey, would you like to have Davide on the podcast? He'd like to join you guys. So, yeah, I mean, thank you very much to Team Trackhouse. It's nice to be asked to interview people rather than have to chase after them, especially team bosses who are, you know, notoriously difficult to get a hold of. So to get a full 30 minutes with them, sitting inside their new hospitality suite, I think we were the first interview in their new hospitality suite at the first European race of the year in Portimao. And yeah, it was good to have the time with them to really sort of dig into things a bit more.
And he's a very welcome returnee to the MotoGP paddock, isn't he? It seemed from the outside like, even though you'd expect a team boss who's led the teams to the success he's had not to be universally popular, it really seems like with his character, he absolutely is.
I mean, on a personal note, I think the entire paddock were delighted to see him back, because just everyone likes the guy as a person.
Yeah.
And you could probably get a bit of a sense of why once you hear him in the podcast, because he is a really likable, friendly person. But yeah, it's there's no one, I think, in the paddock that dislikes him. I can't think of anyone I've ever heard sort of say a bad word against him, which is high praise to him, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's hear Simon and Davide Brivio in conversation about his new role at Trackhouse and one or two other things as well, including that Formula One stint that didn't go as any of us expected.
Davide, welcome back to MotoGP, I guess, is the best place to start.
Thanks. Thanks.
It's nice to have you back. It was a little bit of a surprise whenever we heard that you would be returning with Trackhouse, but it seems like it was an excellent opportunity for you and for them to return to us.
Yeah, let's say at the end of last year, I finished my experience with Alpine Formula One, and I was kind of thinking that maybe during 2024 there might be some opportunity to come back to MotoGP. Honestly, this is what I wanted to do, or what I desire to do, but then you never know. So then I thought maybe being free and announcing that I'm free, I would have made maybe somebody calling. Yes. And then that's what Trackhouse did. And I was well impressed from Trackhouse. First of all, I always been quite fascinated about American sports, America in general, whatever. So that was a good start for that. And also, it's quite interesting because it's the first time I work for an independent team.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. But I think, I mean, the idea is that Trackhouse will be something different.
Yes.
Hopefully. I mean, that's what we're trying to build, not trying to build maybe a strong, independent team with the ambition to compete, to fight. So I like it. I like it, the project. Of course, I like it, Justin, and I like it. Talking to Justin, talking to Ty, people in Track House. I went there, visiting them. So it was all quite fascinating, interesting, exciting for me. So then happy to be here.
What has been the initial impressions of joining the team? You know, no one race done, some testing done, some experience with the guys. What's your experience with them?
Yeah, somehow the team, this team is in some special situation because as we already said, the Track House had in mind to enter MotoGP.
Yeah.
The plan was to enter by 2025. And so for Track House, 24 would have been a year of study, looking around, observing and getting ready. Then suddenly there was an opportunity end of last year when it was November. And then let's say they were invited to join to Rush. And so everybody knows there was a situation where RNF team last year. RNF had some problems, so there was an opportunity for Track House to come into and to continue that job. So we Track House did, and of course this was the start. Let's say that we got started, and has been very excited in Qatar to see the team starting this experience, this adventure. So Track House is in MotoGP. That was the main excitement of the weekend, because also the results were not great. but overall we were all happy for that, to get started, because after these 2-3 months has been very hard for everybody to get there,
yes,
to arrive in Qatar at the first race. I only joined the last month, but the people that were here, they put a lot of effort on getting everything ready. And so thanks very much to them, and congratulations to them, because you can imagine it wasn't an easy situation. No. The team, RNF, was going to finish. The new team was coming. And you have a few weeks where you don't know how this will work, who I have to talk to, or how to organize this. And so it's been quite a very challenging winter. So first of all, we're happy to be here. We're happy to get started. And this is just the beginning of this project for Track House. Make experience for us. This year will be kind of a learning year, where also we need to, first of all, Track House as an organization, as a company, Track House wants to understand more and more about MotoGP.
Yeah.
And all together, we have to figure out what is our strategy, where we want to go, what we want to achieve, how, and all these things. And these are already the discussion, no, in this week's, looking around and see, oh, that's a good idea. That's, we can do this, we can do that. So this is what we're doing. But most important is that in the meantime, we are racing.
Yes.
So, and the most important thing is that, and this was the first question when I joined the team. And of course I met Wilco, the team manager, and all the guys. And I asked, the first question was, is the garage okay? I mean, we got the bikes, we got the riders, we got mechanics, yeah, everything. Can we race? And the answer was yes, we can race. So then now we are trying to work on all behind the garage.
Yes.
Behind the scenes to fix. Of course, there are contracts, discussion, organization, even the hospitality. There are other things, let's say, less important compared to what is the sport and what is the racing. But anyway, it's a job we have to get done. So, as I say, a lot of work to do, still a lot of work to do, but we are here. We started, we race in Qatar, and let's keep forward.
I guess the last time you were in this position, the last time you had this job to do, you had one full year to put together the Suzuki team instead of like 1 month.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, 1 year and a half, because when I started with Suzuki was April 2013, okay. And we were supposed to enter into the championship by 2014.
Yeah.
So we thought we had 8-9 months. Then suddenly, after a few months in the summer, Suzuki decided to postpone another year. That was due to there was a situation in the regulation where the electronic was free.
Yes.
We were not ready. So actually, we waited 2015, where the electronic would have been unique and standard for everybody. So then we ended up to have 1.5 years. Yes, it was much, much more, less intense, let's say. And, but it was a great experience also, that one. So, yeah.
Looking at Trackhouse and know that you were able to start thinking about strategy and about the longer term rather than just getting the team ready for round one. Where do you see the team going in the future? Is this going to be an independent team that can be like a Pramac or fighting for the championship? Or are you the team to develop young riders for Aprilia? Or are you both? Can you be both?
Let's say that we want to have also our own, let's say, success, our own results.
Of course.
I don't know what we can achieve. I don't want to fix a target or like, of course, fighting for the championship is the dream of everybody. That's why everybody's here, I believe. So even if maybe nobody talks openly about that, but everybody's here to win races or to try to fight for the championship, that only few are able to do that. And of course, we want to try to do this. But having said that, we know how difficult it is and how what it takes. What I think the most important thing is the process, no? And the pathway that we have in front of us, trying to improve time to time, try to improve the organization, trying to improve our operations, try to get partners on board, because also as independent team, this is important, and try to build up a strong team from several point of view. Good engineers, good mechanics, good riders, good machines, whatever. It's a fact that we are independent. We are not a manufacturer. So we have to partner with a manufacturer. In this moment, we are partnered with Aprilia, and I think it's a great place to be because I believe that Aprilia is one of the biggest, the strongest challenger in this moment. Of course, to somebody that is winning. Aprilia and KTM, we both trying to challenge, of course, Ducati. To say names. So happy to be here and happy to try to help Aprilia and to contribute if we can to this journey. And but then I don't think we want to just be here and grow up riders for Aprilia.
Yes.
We would like to grow up riders for ourselves and win with Aprilia. So which maybe the results can be the same, but it's a different way. So I think we have to, we have, for instance, now we have two strong riders, Miguel and Raul. They're very talented and they can be our rider to achieve results in the future. That's what it is. We also looking at what is good for us, you know? As a team, we would like to try to have good results on the track, and we will try to secure what it needs to get there.
And from speaking to Justin, from talking to everyone involved in the team, it seems like the goal is also to have a relationship with Aprilia, which is maybe different from how some of the other factories have with their satellite teams. He wants to be really close.
Yeah,
he
wants to be
super connected.
Yeah, this project started with this in mind, not to be very close with Aprilia, to cooperate with them, but we don't see at the moment. Then of course we're talking about strategies, we are discussing, but we don't see our role to grow up young rider, and when they're ready, move to Aprilia factory. That's not what we would like to have our strong riders in our team, which we have now. So now it's a good situation because we have two riders, Raul and Miguel. Miguel is already MotoGP race winner. Anyway, both are race winner in the motorcycle, and so the mission is to bring them as high as possible as a track house. So, and in we are very well connected with Aprilia. We work, of course, with them. We have Aprilia engineer in our garage, so that's definitely the connection and the cooperation is there. But also, I think Aprilia realized and understood that it's good to have a competition, no? As I mean,
yes,
a fair competition on the tracks. So we have four strong riders all together, and they can stimulate each other. And this, I think, is the best way.
Apart from this cooperation with Aprilia, what else do you see Trackhouse doing differently from other MotoGP teams, from other teams you've worked with? You know, what can we take from NASCAR, from your F1 experience, and bring to this team?
Yeah, this is it's a bit early to say, because I know maybe we created a lot of expectation on being different and doing things different, which of course we will try to do, but it's we have to figure out. I mean, I have a lot of respect for all the teams that are here. There are, of course, factory team. There are independent team with a very long history, and so very much respectful of for what they achieve, what they have done, and how they approach this championship. So we have to learn also from them. It can be, I don't know if different, or what we will try to do is also, we are, Trackhouse is an American team involving the NASCAR. So that's the soul, you know, if you like. And we also try to learn from them, from what they're doing in America, what they're doing in a NASCAR. But at the same time, also, I think the NASCAR team can see what we're doing in a MotoGP.
Yeah.
What is the there are things that it would be good, I think, maybe to bring to MotoGP, but there are also things that are good from MotoGP to take to NASCAR. We were chatting a bit, for instance, and in a NASCAR, they have a driver, they're quite busy on entertaining publics, doing PR, which
it seems
I think in a MotoGP, the riders are more lazy from this point of view. Of course, very much focused in the sport.
Yeah.
And in the racing commitments, but not so much on the rest.
Yeah,
this is one difference. Another thing we were chatting is we have in the paddock we have these hospitality units, which is something they not used to see in a NASCAR. And somebody say that that would be nice in NASCAR as well.
Yeah.
So things like that we are studying each other, no, exchanging experience each other. And so what we can do different, I don't know. First of all, let's try to get set up properly to get to improve time to time. This is the most important. And then we will see.
I think the thing about using the athletes more to, you know, more events, more PR is maybe something that's a little bit more important in MotoGP right now, because it feels like we're in a position where our stars are not so well known. The sport's in a little bit of a, you know.
Yeah, I think it's also a matter of culture that we have here in MotoGP. I think we have, I mean, I hope I can explain properly, but we have a lot of respect for the riders because, of course, we know that it's a difficult job to be a rider. You go on the track, the bike. With the bike, you are more exposed to a potential crash, injury, okay, let's say. And we know that. So it's always been a lot of respect on getting the rider concentrate, focus, ready for this. And that's why maybe we always gave a top priority to the sport gesture, okay, to the sport, to their performance on the track. And everything is related to that, which is right, which is correct. What I think is that in these times where the business, it's also a part important of our sport, we probably have to think to find a better compromise between that. If you look at other sports, in Formula One, which is not the same, but it's maybe similar, the drivers are much more busy in media activity on a Thursday, going in a fan zone during the weekend. They do a lot of things, much more. They have a very busy calendar. I have seen that. And let's say our rider, they have, from this point of view, easier life. But also if you look maybe in the football, in other sport, the athletes is now required to do a lot more stuff than just the sport gesture. And this is something that it's quite funny. I can tell you a story. I think a couple of years ago, there was Fernando Alonso. He came to visit a MotoGP race.
Yeah.
He's a friend of Massimo. He came to MotoGP and I wasn't there. I don't remember where he was, maybe Austria. And he sent me a picture, him in a paddock chatting with people and everything. And he sent me a picture saying, I remember the comment saying like, it would be great to have 20, 30 minutes like this during the Formula One weekend, no? Because it was kind of relaxed moment.
Yes.
And so that's, he also saw the difference.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we can find the best compromise. But it's difficult. Eh? It's difficult because you need to change the culture. You need to change the approach. Of course, when you require something, the riders complain. So we have to work and find the better compromise, I think, between the two things.
What else comes back with you from Formula One to MotoGP? Is there more experiences that that you can use here to work in a different way from when you were in MotoGP in the past?
It's been a great experience for me to have the opportunity to look more inside the Formula One organization and Formula One team. And thanks to Alpine and the Renault Group for giving me the chance to do it. And of course, the organization are much bigger, but I would say many operations are pretty similar. I mean, you have a group of engineers, you have engineers on the track, you have performance engineers, you have mechanics, you have marketing, you have communication. So let's say this sort of department are similar. But of course, in Formula One, it's so many people, so it's much more complicated to organize them. It's quite fascinating and interesting also the way of communicate each other, because of course you have many people to keep updated on everything. So the way of communicate, the way a lot of meetings going on to keep everybody updated and this thing. And what I have seen in Formula One is like many few things that there are in MotoGP in terms of team organization, they are just bigger. Maybe what in MotoGP, maybe you have 25 people in the team. In Formula One is 80.
Yes.
So 60 operational, but then many more on the side.
Yeah.
And so what I can bring is, of course, I have more experience from this point of view. I have more ideas, let's say. Yeah. or some idea that I had, they were at the beginning of the idea. I saw how it's been realized. I say, oh, okay, that's how it could be done.
Yes.
So more idea. And also a little bit different, maybe approach, a mindset.
Yeah.
I would say maybe more focus on important things. Maybe this is more personal than my experience, but looking more, try to give priority to what is more important and don't care so much about details and things that are less important and let them go, because there's nothing you can do. Before, maybe I was more careful about everything, every single thing, try to take care of everything. And, but it's difficult. You cannot take care of everything. So maybe from this point of view, because like Formula One is such a big organization, you cannot control everything at 100%. Yeah. So that's why you give priority or you delegate people to do things.
Yes.
So maybe learn to delegate more. Give priority. So maybe that's the two things that I will take away. And of course, many ideas. Yes.
Yeah. It sounds then like the time in F1, maybe if it didn't take the path that we thought when you went, it sounds like it was useful, like it was beneficial.
Yeah.
Like you enjoyed it.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm glad. I'm very happy I had the chance to do it.
Yeah.
I would have missed it.
Yes.
If I didn't do.
Yeah.
Even if I'm honest, it didn't go as I thought, mm-hmm. as I wanted. But it was a great opportunity for me to look inside. And of course, I met also great people. I have friends there. And it's been an interesting time, tough in certain moments.
Yeah.
I admit that. Quite tough, but looking back, I'm happy I've done. I will try it again. I will try it again, but with this experience, maybe it will be better.
maybe this is a difficult question, but do you understand why it didn't go the way that you were hoping?
Yes, I understand. I mean, I understand. I have my own ideas.
Yeah.
And I arrived in Formula One probably without a previous experience.
Yeah.
So probably without that Formula One credibility that you need to be a certain level.
Yes.
Because when I joined Formula One, I was in a management level, but I didn't have the background in the Formula One.
Yeah,
which is what I did in MotoGP. I mean, I realized then this thing.
Yes.
I didn't thought 3-4 years ago. I'm thinking now.
Yeah.
In a MotoGP, I spent many years going through different roles, mm-hmm. and at the end ended up to be whatever, team manager, team principal, but with the experience.
Working up there.
So when you arrive there, you have the experience. You know very well the environment. You know the people. And you build your credibility, because if they bring you there, it's because probably you deserve it, not step by step.
Yeah.
In Formula One, I jumped there directly on management job without this credibility. And probably, I don't know, that's my idea. It was more difficult to be a credible manager I mean, not with everybody, but with some
with
key
some.
People.
Yeah.
And also, I didn't have the enough experience probably to be there. Maybe too high, too soon.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But that is a lesson that I learned.
Yeah.
I'm glad I learned.
Yeah.
And so as I say, I mean, I'm no regret. I'm very happy I have done this experience. Could have been different, but great experience for sure.
And I guess another reason for having no regrets is that shortly after you left, Suzuki made this decision that we still don't understand really why to walk away.
Yeah, that's somehow surprising, but not so much because I think, but it's just my personal opinion. I don't know exactly the reason, because they never really explain it very clearly. I think a certain moment probably Suzuki felt to be a little bit behind on some area like electric vehicles, hybrid technologies, and probably wanted to concentrate resources there.
Yes.
But it, as I say, it's my very personal opinion.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a big corporate, in a big company like this, you have a board of directors. Probably there's been a few meetings where they decided why don't we use that resources or that engineers, that know-how, that money somewhere else? Yeah. And of course, it's been a pity. And I think probably Suzuki is missing now that, the racing activity. But okay, it's a company decision, very respectful, and yeah, that's it.
And going back to the where we are right now, or maybe going forward from where we are right now, I know we've only, you know, it's only the second round of MotoGP this season, but when do you need to start looking at the future plans for Trackhouse? When do you need to start thinking about riders for next season? When does all of this need to start coming together?
But about riders, we work very closely with Aprilia.
Yeah.
So at the moment, Miguel and Raul, they are Aprilia contracted riders. So we're working with them and to see what's the plan? Yes. What's Aprilia plan? Of course, we have a very good relationship, and we can discuss together what to do. Also, first we didn't yet started to talk. I don't know what Raul and Miguel wants to do. Yeah. And we have to see, I guess also within Aprilia, we have to look at all four riders.
Yes.
What the four riders wants to do, if they have other opportunity or not, if Aprilia wants to take other opportunity or not. So it's something that I know that the market is moving. There are thinking, but yeah. Chats like this, but there's not been yet a clear strategy. I mean, as far as I know. And we as a track house at the moment, we wait also to see. I think also as far as concerned the riders market, now there are the factory that has to make the moves.
Yes.
And I think pretty close to the end because, okay, there are few slots to be defined, but there's not so many choices also available. So I think this will close quite soon. And then when the factory are set, so the independent teams can see what to do.
See who's left.
We will have a few disappointed riders that they couldn't go in a factory teams.
Yeah.
And so this could be an opportunity for independent team. But having said that, the first step is to look at our four riders, what they want to do, what we want to do with them. And then we have to see if it's necessary to do moves or not.
It seems like it should be a super interesting year in this world for, you know, for the independent teams, because there will be some guys. I can think of one world champion who you worked with before, who potentially is the sort of person who's, you know, others.
It's a great situation because we have, I mean, really in MotoGP there are plenty of great riders, top riders.
Yeah.
Many, I don't know now statistically, but many MotoGP race winners.
Yeah.
And in general, many race winners across all the categories. So there is a lot of talent there, no doubt. There is a lot of great riders there, but there are only 10 factory team places.
Yes.
And few out of 10, maybe they're not a great places to be.
Yes.
So it could be, maybe, who knows? Let's put it in this way. It could be a hot summer for independent teams markets rather than normally for the factories.
Exactly. Huh?
Because the factory will be closed soon.
Yeah.
So by the spring is finished, and there will be the hot summer for the independent team.
And finally, just to wrap it up, if we sit down and have a conversation again in Valencia, at the end of this season, what will have made you happy with the team, with the performance? What will be the level that you will be pleased with from this season, without setting the specific targets and saying, we need to win four races? Or
No. I will be happy if we arrive Thursday morning in Valencia and before the weekend, and with the expectation, the hopes to fight at the top of the race. Because it means we did our job to improve step by step and to improve the team operation. That's what I say. It's the priority more than a result.
Yes.
Or more than the number to be classified X. I want to see maybe if we make a mistake one weekend, to not do it again.
Yeah.
To see what we can improve the next weekend. This is what we have to do this year.
Perfect. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Been a pleasure.
So yeah, as Simon promised, a very genial half hour in the company of Davide Brivio. Thank you so much, Trackhouse, for facilitating and offering that. Thank you so much, Davide Brivio, for being up for it as well. We should talk about his current job before we get into anything else, and that is running Trackhouse now. And what a coup for a team, a new team coming into MotoGP as a bit of a disruptor to bring back such an iconic team boss. Simon and Val, who wants to go first? What did you make of how he sees his role, how he sees the team at the moment?
It actually sounds a little bit like, you know, they wanted him, but he wanted them as well. I'm not going to say conspiracy to get him back into MotoGP through this team, but definitely it was something that both sides were working at almost as soon as the whole thing was announced, and it lined up really well for them. So, you know, credit to them for signing him, but also credit to him for having the foresight to get involved, you know, speaking to, I'm sure, his good friend Massimo Rivola, who's the Aprilia boss, and made the whole thing happen. When they first announced that Brivio was coming into the team, I was a little bit critical. Not critical, but just, he struck me as a surprise addition, a team that were looking to do things differently and to shake things up in MotoGP. But actually, in reality, what they've managed to, you know, what he's managed to convince me over the course of both what I've seen since he came back and over the course of the podcast is that actually he gets it, and he's looking to do things a bit differently. He gets what they're trying to do. He's obviously very, very keen to take like experience and what he's seen in F1 about how things are done differently there. He's also looking very closely at how to do things in the NASCAR world and take stuff from there. And actually, I've changed my stance on it, and I'm of the opinion now that maybe actually, because he's got the Davide Brivio clout factor and he wants to do things differently, he's the person to make it happen, because he's got the, you know, he's walked the walk. So whenever he says he wants to do something, there's not really anyone in the team can complain about it.
No, that is a good point, actually. He manages to both be as establishment as you can possibly get, given all his success at Yamaha and Suzuki, but with that open-mindedness, like you say, to still kind of go along with the Trackhouse vibe, which they intend to be very different as they get themselves established. But when you look at Trackhouse's results so far this season, which are quite hard to find on the results sheet, I'd say, I don't think that's a crazy set of results, crazy bad set of results for a team that has had some turbulent times in its previous incarnation and is, you know, the Aprilia customer. But I also feel like we had a bit more excitement, particularly around what Raul Fernandez was doing in testing. So, Val, should we be a bit disappointed with Trackhouse two rounds in, or is that unfair? Yeah, where do you stand on how they're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a bit disappointed is absolutely fair. I think that's fair to say. And it doesn't necessarily reflect on Brivio yet in any meaningful way, because he hasn't had much of a chance to establish the team the way he will want it to be. And it's clear from the interview that there are lofty goals and that he didn't just come in for the team to fill a grid slot in MotoGP, that like so many satellite teams in MotoGP right now, they dream of bigger things. There's a noticeable pushback to the idea, which is the idea that, you know, Simon brought to him, but that I also specifically asked Simon to bring to him, of Trackhouse being sort of a farm for Aprilia riders, if that makes any sense. Clearly, they do not want to be seen that way. They want to be seen as an Aprilia equal that has the chance to beat them on any given day and frequently enough without it being an aberration, which is the modern MotoGP way of things, but also is, you know, it's still, for a new team, it's quite lofty. But when you bring in Davide Brivio, that is what you signal, that you're not just here to pace yourself or to establish yourself.
And I should say that it's not really something we talked about in the podcast, but from speaking to the team and from speaking to, you know, the people around it, that's also how they want to work with American talent. There's been suddenly a load of talk of, oh, Joe Roberts got in the podium in Moto2 at the second round of the year, and he's obviously going to be the Trackhouse signing for next season. That's not going to be the case necessarily, because they want to do the same thing. They want to develop and build the whole support structure and then kind of organically get to the point where American talent is coming in. And I think they want to do the same thing in terms of building the MotoGP team the way that, say, Pramac have, to the point where they're organically capable of beating the factory on any given day.
And, you know, going back to the performance question of it, this is a team that has been through a lot. It's a team that's still undergoing a lot of changes, particularly in the leadership structure, but it is also an established MotoGP team. I think describing it as a whole new entity maybe is fair from a marketing standpoint or some of those off-track standpoints, but on track, it is a MotoGP team that has been a MotoGP team for a considerable amount of time, which is why that sort of, you know, early betting in period is lesser for me. Like, I don't afford them as much leeway on that. And so far, I've not been particularly whelmed by what I've seen on track, let's put it that way. But it's just been two rounds. But you asked me about the two rounds, and that's, yeah.
No, I think that's fair, because, okay, this is, like you say, from a marketing point of view, a new team. From a practical point of view, this is, to a degree, Petronas Yamaha with a bike that is kind of what Yamaha used to be in some ways, the sweet handling bike on the grid. And now with Davide Brivio running it as well, with all his experience of winning championships elsewhere. So there is a lot about the elements of this package that should be right. I will happily give them half a year of gelling everything together, working out what they are now and how that all operates together. But there's so much about this team that should be massive.
Yes and no, because at the same time, this has been, you know, to be quite blunt, this is a team that hasn't had the easiest run of it in the garage over the course of the last year. There's been mechanical problems, there's been technical issues, there's been human error creeping into creating a few mistakes. I mean, we're two races into this season,
yeah,
and we've already seen Raul Fernandez having a technical problem on the grid at the first round. There is work to be done, one with Brivio's, you know, sort of credibility and experience in the garage as well, because to be frank, it is clear that things aren't going all that well. And even coming out of last weekend's Portuguese Grand Prix, there has been whispers and rumours that Miguel Oliveira isn't particularly happy with the way things are going in the garage, and has kind of hinted, in, especially in Portuguese, that you know, some of the blame of that is on his team, that it's not something that's on his shoulders. So there is something to be done there for Brivio too. It's not just a case of he's going to come in here to a team that's technically already completely established, and that his entire job is going to be, you know, deciding how they spend the marketing budget. There's stuff to be done in the garage too.
And I should say, I'm not necessarily being like critical of the team setup and of the team staff. I'm not actually sure as to what I really should have expected or should expect going forward, because obviously the issues that they had at the end of last year and just generally throughout is not something that you can just magically fix in a moment with better investment. It just doesn't happen that way. There will still be lingering carryover effects. And also, just reliability-wise, it's not like the works Aprilias are stunning us with their ability to finish races, right? One of them just chucked a rider off on the final lap from a podium position very happily. So when I think Trackhouse, honestly, like, so far my question is to the riders primarily, I would have to say. Miguel Oliveira has not gelled with the 2024 bike yet. Now, how much of that is on his side of the garage, how much of that is his riding specifically, how much of that is, you know, however much attention he gets relative to the worst guys, I think he'll know better than anyone, and he'll presumably tell us over the course of the season if his form doesn't improve. And Raul Fernandez is the one we were, as Matt pointed out, excited about, and, you know, still remain very curious about, but we still are seeing sort of that same pattern continue with him. And it's a pattern that he needs to break out of. But at the same time, you know, the 23 Aprilia will be getting left behind now. So maybe it's really hard to judge how much that's already happened.
This is the problem, though, isn't it? With at least three quarters of the Aprilia lineup, you look at those riders and go, oh, I can't have much faith in whether they're getting the most out of the bike or indeed themselves on any given day. And then suddenly, you know, you'll get these magical Oliveira performances, you'll get these magic Maverick Vinales performances, you'll get these magic testing laps as much as anything else from Raul Fernandez, and a few race performances at the end of last year. But there's not a clear, yeah, these guys are going to deliver, like, even 80% of the time to a predictable high quality. And that just, I haven't mentioned Aleix Espargaró there because I feel like he is certainly delivering his maximum. But then there's still the question with him, like, he's had an incredible career for someone who did not come in seen as a top liner to win the race he has, to put in the long shot title bids he has, is supremely impressive. But you don't look at him and go, he's getting what Fabio Quartararo would get out of the bike. There's so many rider question marks around the whole Aprilia lineup, and that affects, that hits Trackhouse even harder than the works team.
Yeah, but I think what Brivio said about the hot summer for satellite silly season and good riders,
yeah,
like works caliber riders being left without work seats and being potentially up for grabs, I think Trackhouse will be an attractive proposition. It's, you know, it is a good bike. It is a team that's clearly, you know, has a roadmap, is going somewhere. I would not be, which is also, you know, everything I look at, I look through the prism of, will Raul Fernandez and Miguel Oliveira be enough by the end of the season if the team progresses as it does? And if the team feels it is progressing as it does, but maybe the results aren't there. It is going to be really interesting to see. I'm not saying that they've let me down yet in any way. Like, the riders of the team is two rounds into the season. But again, the early assessment is, especially with Raul Fernandez and his 2023 bike, that I think every round is going to get less and less and less competitive. You really want to see something right now. And also the contracts are all being decided. So,
yeah.
I would be very surprised if they end up with the same rider lineup next season.
Yes, surely.
And I'm not saying that in that I'm not sure. I'm not even sure which one of them is likely to leave and which one of them is likely to stay. I think it would probably tip a little bit towards Oliveira being the one that has to look elsewhere. But I'm not entirely sure of that. But I am pretty sure that, you know, I can't see this being the same two rider lineup, simply because I think that there will be other names on the sort of the job list who are maybe a bit more attractive.
Well, also, surely Dorna is going to be quite keen for some good people to land at Trackhouse. This is a team it can do some good work with in a market it wants to get bigger in. And you know, this is how MotoGP works. Dorna can prod some people in the right direction to achieve a goal when it needs to.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a Dorna commitment to this team right now, not just because of the way that they find themselves onto the grid at the start of the season, but, I mean, Trackhouse still don't have a title sponsor. And while I believe that Justin Marks is a huge racing fan who's really committed to running a MotoGP team, I doubt that he's putting in probably the 7 million euros a year, 6 million euros a year that would be needed to make this whole thing happen. Just out of his own pocket. So there has to be a bit of support from elsewhere. There has to be a bit of support from Dorna. It's not a surprise to me that the title sponsors, or the sponsors that are on the bike right now, are all essentially people who've been sponsoring Dorna for years and years. And have very obviously, you know, GoPro have been a Dorna partner for as long as I can remember. And they've appeared on the bike, which makes sense. They're obviously an American company that's been moved over there to help out in year one. And that's another area where Brivio is probably going to have to come in quite strong to try and put a name on the bike before too long. There will be, and there is, a big American commercial team behind the whole Trackhouse side of things. But you got to think he's also going to be playing a role in bringing in some names and some money.
Brivio turning up at Trackhouse came slightly out of the blue, but before that, he'd been linked with somewhere else, Repsol Honda. Why didn't that happen? Should it have happened? Has he dodged a bullet there?
I mean, part of me thinks that the reason... We never got a clarification on this, first of all, so it's entirely speculation. We were like, Goods has told me that that was pretty close to done back at the time, and then it all went away very quickly. I would speculate that maybe it's because Honda sacked everyone else in the team, so they didn't want to sack the actual team boss, Alberto Puig, as well. They just gutted everything else around him. And maybe, you know, it got to the point where it was like, let's let one person stay just so that, like, the management knows the name of the team. it was that much of a clearing out, you know, they really have, and continue actually, as it seems, to kind of chop names out of the HRC establishment, put in new guys. Maybe they just felt that getting rid of Alberto as well was a step too far all at once.
Yeah, interesting. I when the Brivio stuff came out around Honda, I thought that made a lot of sense given his reputation. But then, in a weird way, that at the stage of his career he's at and with what he's achieved before, the Trackhouse left fieldness makes even more sense. You know, he's done He hasn't done pulling a manufacturer back from an absolute state. Like, he was there at the start of Yamaha, wasn't he? He's done. It's so, his career is so long and so wide ranging. You forget that he wasn't just there for the glory years at Yamaha. He actually made the glory years possible by hunting down Rossi and making that move come off. So in some ways, the guy who stole Rossi from Repsol Honda come back to rescue Repsol Honda would have had a lovely circle to it. But no, I can see why from his point of view, Trackhouse has appealed as something different. Particularly, we should talk about this as well, because this was often in this podcast, we kind of apologize for mentioning Formula One, but in this context, I think it's really important to, because you did mention his stint with the Alpine F1 team, which I think everyone in the F1 paddock who pays attention to MotoGP was really excited about Brivio coming over. Lots of people in the F1 paddock who then encountered Brivio were like, this guy's great. And one of my our colleagues, Scott Mitchell-Marm, wrote a column early in Brivio's first season at Alpine when it was already obvious that he was a strange fit in a team that was in a bit of chaos and restructuring at the time. And he wrote a column titled something along the lines of Brivio makes you want this weird setup to work, because you could tell his enthusiasm for F1 as well, having been a kind of childhood fan and climbed over the fence at Monza and stuff. And he was so engaging about having this opportunity in F1 and what he wanted to achieve that you really hoped it would come off. But then he got sidelined very quickly. Our understanding from our F1 colleagues is that there was quite a lot of kind of internal opposition to Brivio. He had been chosen by one part of the Alpine hierarchy and some of the establishment just didn't see the point of him being there. It is interesting that he almost puts not blame on himself in your interview, Simon, but he kind of holds his hand up for going, maybe I couldn't make that move to come in from MotoGP to F1 without being more established than F1 itself. What's your take on his F1 stint?
You definitely, as someone who isn't that familiar with it, and especially not with the kind of the politics of Alpine in particular, which seems to be complete and utter mess, from what our F1 guys have hinted at. He very much suggested that he would do things differently if he did them again. Like, that was my takeaway from that there was lessons to be learned from it, which are probably, in the grand scheme of things, a good thing for MotoGP, because it makes him come back to MotoGP more experienced, more worldly, a bit wiser about all of that stuff, as he joins an organization that's probably different from anything that there's ever been in MotoGP before, because, you know, Trackhouse are essentially a factory-sized team in that, you know, I think there's 150 or 180 staff back in Charlotte, North Carolina, running the NASCAR side of things. And then we've got this new motorcycle division. It's almost like a factory team in MotoGP. You know, it's comparable to the size of, say, Suzuki's entire racing program whenever Brivio was there. So it's different because they're still a satellite team. So yeah, maybe it means he comes in a bit more surprise, a bit more, you know, bit different attitude, and that's a good thing. The one thing that I will say he did concede after the interview that I was quite pleased with is that he said that he hasn't told anyone else that before, that it's the first time he's really got onto the subject of the F1 move. So it was good to get that from him.
Yeah, definitely. Val?
I'm almost mindful of how neatly his version of events falls into our general understanding of that particular Formula One team and the situations around it. It makes all the sense in the world that one side of the corporate overlords overseeing the racing operation brought in a guy it thought might work without really a plan for how to integrate him, and then everybody else within the team was offended at the idea that some outsider is here to fix our broken ship, and weren't particularly inclined to accommodate or help him. We know now, since these years, that it was a dysfunctional team that has now turned over all of its leadership basically twice since then.
Yes.
It was never going to work. He's never going to say it, but it was never, ever, ever going to work. And, you know, it's not his fault for jumping at the chance. It's not, honestly, it's not whoever's fault who offered it for making the offer because it's romantic. I get it. It's, you know, we're all romantics when it comes to racing and racing teams in a way too. But he was doomed. It was doomed from second one. And I think that's pretty clear now, knowing what we know about Renault/Alpine/Team Enstone/whatever else it is going to be. That poor, unfortunate racing outfit that I think once we held up, this is some context for the non-F1 fans, once held up as a very effective, very successful, very efficient racing operation, even once it ran out of money, now basically a team that everybody makes a lot of fun of.
I was just going to ask, like, is it fair to say that Brivio's kind of, like, he hasn't lost any reputation or done any harm to his reputation because the ship is still sinking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Completely. With or without him.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually. If you rewind a few years, and again, we're getting to some F1 context, which is hopefully helpful for MotoGP listeners who have followed F1 less. There were times in this F1 team's history where it actually felt a bit like Suzuki in the Brivio years in terms of not got the budget of the other manufacturers, but it's just making things happen by being pure racers, having some good drivers. You could fit that in. And then in its current incarnation.
2012, 2013.
Yeah, yeah. Even in the Fernando Alonso championship years as Renault in 2005, 2006, it wasn't operating with Ferrari money, but it was beating Ferrari through being nimble and aggressive and clever. And you could slot a Brivio character into that. That's interesting. I am lucky enough to be a regular guest on Bring Back V10s, our retro F1 podcast about the 90s and early 2000s. And one of the things that always strikes me in those episodes is how the character F1 team bosses has partially changed since then. There was a lot of very high corporate arrogance around that era. And I wouldn't say that is completely gone from F1 team bosses by a long way. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to pinpoint any names here, but there are other people who run F1 teams now who I can imagine sitting down for a drink with and finding their company very enjoyable. And so in that sense, I thought, yeah, Brivio is arriving in F1 at a time when it might suit him a bit more, but he was not arriving in a team that was going to suit him with everything else that was going on in that team in its current incarnation. And it's sad that it didn't work, but it's a lucky escape. The way he talks about how, in retrospect, maybe someone who didn't have that F1 experience shouldn't come into that big a role in an F1 team. I'm intrigued by that because people come from a lot of backgrounds to become F1 team bosses these days. I'm not sure. I suspect that was more particular to his reception at Alpine and in other organizations. That might not have been a problem. What do you reckon, Val?
I think so. I mean, we've had a Williams tech designer come in from rallying and that also didn't entirely work out.
Yeah,
and true. Williams boss come in from rallying and that. It's an increasingly, Formula One's clearly like it. There's certain established things about it, and it's harder to just come in from the outside and try to revolutionize. And he wasn't really even trying to do that. He was just trying to fit in, clearly, and just have a go at this as a good rider manager and, you know, translating that into helping manage a team. But it wasn't the right team. It's not a bad team, just wasn't clearly with what's going on with it. Like somebody, the credibility part is more important. Like that ship is still like sinking every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Right now, that is factually a bad team with its current performance. It is.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
For listeners unaware of what's going on in F1 this season, Alpine is firmly the slowest team on the grid right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's a long time since Brivio has been out of it. But the changes that were being made around that time have kind of led it to where it is now. It's interesting. Again, we're going on a massive tangent here. But I'm just thinking in terms of I don't want anyone to look at this situation and go, oh, that proves that F1 is so far ahead of other motorsport that you can't parachute somebody in anymore. You know, McLaren F1 team is run by someone in Zak Brown whose background was marketing rather than team management. Okay, yeah. Marketing at a very high level. But it's not impossible, I would say, for someone who understands the mechanics of how humans operate and how companies should be structured and how motorsport runs to come into F1 from wherever and run a team. I think Brivio hit a wall in terms of the team he was parachuted into. You mentioned the Williams experiment with Jos Capito coming in from rallying. The accounts from our F1 colleagues that was more a personality issue that led to that going as badly as it did. So I would love to see some other people from outside backgrounds come into F1 teams and prove these examples wrong, that you can make it work. But
I think Simon will disagree with this, presumably, and maybe will be right to do so. But I think it is just an indication that whatever internal strife within teams and the Game of Thrones stuff that goes on in MotoGP, right, it is not at the same level as Formula One. Like Formula One, that's just a fact of life that you assume immediately in every situation, even when things are going well.
In terms of the bastardry element and how like much kind of chopping and changing can happen.
The thing about MotoGP teams is that they're just smaller.
Exactly.
So, you know, we have three people running a team, essentially, and those three people probably share an office and a hire car on a race weekend and probably sit next to each other in the flights to the race, which makes it harder to run those kind of massive backstabbing Game of Thrones style plots against each other that F1 seems to be all about at the minute. It's harder to do whenever you've got a smaller, more cohesive team. So yeah, I think Brivio probably went in as a bit of a bit politically naive in that sense, because it's not something that even at Yamaha, or especially at Suzuki, I think he would ever have really experienced.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. It's interesting, actually. You know, the trend is more the other way at the moment. People coming in from MotoGP, coming in from F1 to MotoGP with Massimo Rivola, Luca Marmarini.
Yeah.
What's your experience so far, Simon? Have you had much chance to chat to any of these people about how much they're enjoying life in MotoGP? Because I get the sense that anyone coming from F1 to MotoGP is having a whale of a time.
I mean, Rivola loves it. Massimo Rivola loves being in the bike world, and you get a sense speaking to him that he feels like he wasted years of his life for Ferrari F1, where it was political and quite rigid, and now he's just come in and, you know, he runs his relatively little team in comparison, has great fun doing it. He gets to make decisions. He's involved with everything that happens, and I get the impression that if you're that kind of hands-on personality, that I think Brivio also is. And it's no surprise that Rivola and Brivio were quite good friends. I think that it suits them very well.
As a public-facing boss, I think Massimo Rivola would do also a really good job in Formula One if he ever got the opportunity. Like, he just, something about him really does work. I think he's done again, public-facing. I don't know the private, what's, you know, the machinations, because that's always part of it. But I think he's quite a good fit for that kind of thing.
Thanks. A lovely note to end this podcast. And we don't want to get into like which is better, MotoGP or F1. And for Val and I, our day job involves a lot of F1 as well, and it does some big numbers that contribute to the success of the race. But I have to say, as a fan at heart, MotoGP is the thing that does excite me the most these days. And it's probably no surprise to me that people are having a bit more fun in it than they are in F1. Thanks again to
2024. It's not been particularly close so far. If any bike fans like to hear this, of which I am one, but yeah, it's not been close. Not even close.
I've always had this slight, maybe because I came into it later, like F1 became sort of my job rather than the thing I followed as a fan, and then MotoGP was the thing that my job started to involve halfway through, but I got into as a fan at the same time. And I realize that when I even hear that theme tune that MotoGP now has, I'm like a dog with a block of cheese being waved at me. I get so excited that a MotoGP race is about to happen. And my wife said to me recently, it's like I'm experiencing what it is to be a sports fan for the first time in a few years with how MotoGP has been the last couple of years, rather than it just being my job. And so thanks, MotoGP, for doing that, because it does make weekends a bit more enjoyable. Thank you to Trackhouse again for making that interview possible. Thank you to Brivio for your time. Thank you, listeners. Next week, we have another one of these interview specials with Carlos Ezpeleta, the sporting director of MotoGP. That is another very special one. You should look forward to listening to that in about a week's time. Thanks for your time today, and we're back in your ears next week.
The Athletic.